Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy speculation and advice. Now, along with the guys from GuillotineLeagues.com, here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to Episode 1, year number 27 of Fantasy Football Weekly.
We did it.
We did it. People said you'd never make it 26 years. Ha ha!
Yeah. And we did 27.
27 years. That's the voice of my co-host, Matt Harrison from Shock Fantasy, and Scott Fish as well. Hi, Scott.
What's going on?
Congratulations on another highly successful Scott Fish Bowl. That's number 11 is done.
Yes.
Already planning number 12.
Yep, absolutely have. Got some good stuff in store for next year.
Absolutely. Raised lots. Do you have a big tally board of how much money the Scott Fish Bowl has raised for charity this year?
In the last year or over the
years? Yes, the last year.
Over $100,000 this year.
$100,000.
Yep, over.
I want to thank the $7,200 that came from people that tried the Super Chop at GuillotineLeagues.com.
Ooh, raised, including me.
Including, thank you.
Yeah.
I will thank you personally for that. Thank you very much for being a part of it, which is great. There's plenty to get to over the course of this edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. We'll start the show by telling you the one thing you need to know about every team's offseason. We will then give you the training camp battles that we are watching throughout training camp. We're into training camps now, but here are the battles that are of particular note to fantasy owners. Then we'll look at the Dynasty and Empire rookie drafts. We'll go through the average draft position for the first two rounds, and we'll tell you if people are taking these players too early, too late, or at just about the right time. We'll also answer three tough questions. We'll get to all of our sleepers, and we'll give you some ideas about what to do with that extra week that's on your schedule now that the NFL has employed the 17-week season. So plenty of good stuff to get to. Let's begin by going through the one thing you need to know about every team's offseason. Now, the way I've asked my co-hosts, Scott and Matt, to handle this is not the most obvious thing, not necessarily the biggest thing. Like, Aaron Rodgers is now in camp. That's not, everybody knows that.
What?
We want to go with the stuff you need, the one thing you need to know about each team. We begin with Scott and the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, I'm not going to keep it to one because I'm terrible at this and I don't follow the rules. Darnold is looking great, but Terrace Marshall is just ripping up camp. And there's a great, great connection with Dan Arnold in camp right now that the beat writers keep talking about.
Okay, Brian Johnson.
Those two receivers. keep an eye for them late in your draft.
All right, Matt. The Las Vegas Raiders.
Offensive line went through a massive overhaul, and not necessarily for the better. The Raiders let three starters go this offseason. They'll have an unproven center, likely Andre James, who had a Pro Football Focus grade of 24, replacing Rodney Hudson, who was a 73. And then first-round pick Alex Leatherwood, Richie Incognito, who was injured most of last year, and Denzel Good, who should be named Denzel slightly below average after his rank of 59th among 84 guards last year. It's going to be a offensive line that's in flux all year.
Massive flux,
and it's going to be bad for the Raiders.
And usually when you turn over the offensive line to that degree, it takes half a season before they start to gel. For the Packers, often fantasy analysts will talk about vacated targets, and it's almost always within the purview of wide receivers and tight ends. But I want to talk about Jamal Williams, who leaves behind 40 targets, 30 receptions, and 240 receiving yards last year. And now with Jamal Williams gone from Green Bay, where are those targets going? Well, A.J. Dillon doesn't catch. He had three targets all of last year. Almost all of that work probably goes to Aaron Jones, who could vault his receiving numbers from the 40-ish receptions into like the 60s or 70s receptions, at which point he turns into Christian McCaffrey. Let's go to the Washington football team.
He just easily turns into McCaffrey.
Bing! I'm Christian McCaffrey.
Supposedly, Ryan Fitzpatrick and Taylor Heinicke are in a true battle for that starter job. They did pay Fitz a ton of money, so I think he'll start out. But Fitz, he's going to have someone possibly coming in for him sooner than later.
One of the frequent frustrations with Fitz is that he's not a great practice quarterback. He's a game day quarterback.
And the other thing is, when he's given the reins, that's when he falters. It's when he comes in is when he's
right,
good.
Right. Buffalo Bills. What's the one thing people need to know about the team's offseason?
People are overlooking Zach Moss, and he's ready to be the bell cow there. And only 8 fully healthy games last year where he wasn't on the injury report. 4.6 yards per touch and 5 touchdowns. Mm. And he was tied with Josh Allen in rushing attempts from the infrared zone inside the 10 with 15. He was also Pro Football Focus's highest graded pass blocker amongst running backs last year with an elite 89.9 grade compared to Devin Singletary at 45.
Yeah.
Moss has a chance to be a 3-down back this year.
I love it. And he's going so late. Next, the Houston Texans. With the loss of Will Fuller and Randall Cobb, the Texans have 123 vacated targets to account for. Brandon Cooks got 119 targets last year, so he can maybe get a few more, but not a lot. I think it's really worth watching the other position battles at wide receiver. Rookie Nico Collins is being described as having one of the best camps of any rookie. He's going off the board as wide receiver 168, Nico Collins. He might be a week one starter for a team that's going to be perpetually behind.
He's a week one starter.
Keke Coutee is going off the board at wide receiver 202. I didn't even know there were 202 receivers in the league.
There's no league that drafts 202 wide receivers.
I know. So those are guys that you could watch get late and will have the advantage of picking up some of those vacated targets. Let's go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, so I think the big one here is not only was Gio Bernard recruited by Tom Brady, but apparently he's getting up to speed in camp, and they really like what they're seeing, making an even bigger mess out of that running back situation and possibly one to avoid or grab the cheapest.
Yeah, I'm a Ronald Jones guy. Let's go to the Cleveland Browns. Matt.
Cleveland's tight ends were targeted on 30% of Baker Mayfield's throws last season, which was good for third highest share in the league. And Austin Hooper is currently going off the board as tight end 23, which is the last round in your draft.
Mm-hmm.
He was also targeted 40 times in the Browns' final 5 games of 2020, with the 2 playoff games included, and had 3 touchdown catches in that span. Also, the Browns have Pro Football Focus's highest rated O-line. So Hooper's not expected to stay in and block as much. I kind of like Hooper as a deep sleeper this year.
All right. We'll go to the Indianapolis Colts. You guys already know the big story. Carson Wentz and Quentin Nelson are both have had foot surgery, expected to miss a fair amount of time. Quentin Nelson, I think it's September. Carson Wentz, probably October, just based on the mobility they need to play their positions. Jacob Eason is the expected starter. Let's go to the Detroit Lions.
So Hockenson has been the best player in camp. I don't know if a lot of people have been hearing that, but the big news has been Campbell and Lynn have consistently commented multiple times this offseason and during camp that Swift and Williams will be a 1-2 punch and share, and they've even made the dreaded hot hand comment multiple times.
Ooh.
So beware of that.
That is something to beware of. Let's go to the New York Jets.
Completely new offense. New offensive coordinator Mike LaFleur, Matt's brother, Zach Wilson, Michael Carter, Elijah Moore, Corey Davis, Elijah Vera Tucker at guard. But I wanted to mention Elijah Moore for a minute. He was the 34th overall pick. Jets beat writers are going bonkers over him. The Athletic's Connor Hughes says he's the Jets' best player. Not wide receiver, player.
Says a lot. It is the Jets.
On 101 targets at Ole Miss last year, he was charged with only 2 drops, and he has a list on his bathroom mirror of all the wide receivers drafted ahead of him, and he looks at it every day,
staring,
steaming.
Right. I kind of like that.
That's I do, too.
I don't mean anything, but
that
I
was
like
the old Maurice Jones-Drew thing, right? He did that, too? Something similar?
Maybe. I know, Randy Moss, like, remembered every team that passed on him in the draft. I remember that.
Yeah.
In Kansas City, last time we saw the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes was getting bulldozed in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So, wisely, they overhauled their offensive line. They released longtime tackles Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz. The Chiefs traded for Ravens starting tackle Orlando Brown, and Brown has gotten better every year. He's a very good pass blocker in particular. The other big move was signing left guard Joe Thuney in free agency. He's developed into one of the NFL's best guards. And then the right guard, they actually have a battle there between Dr. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, the guy who opted out to work as a frontline healthcare worker last year, and the unretired Kyle Long. So, that's real significant improvements.
Kind of a win-win.
It was a brilliant offseason, and I think, by the way, they upgraded their center to Austin Blythe from the Rams. So Chiefs are in a great spot this year. Let's go to the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, I'm going to go a little deeper here, something that's not talked about as much, but the Seahawks want to run a whole lot more. They want this year for some reason. And DJ Dallas has been getting all the third down passing role work, and they've talked about him as being the change of pace come in on third down for Carson guy. If that's true, late in drafts, he might be a value for those guys, people, if you miss on, you know, starting running backs.
All right, let's go to the Denver Broncos. The one thing people need to know from the offseason.
We'll talk about the quarterback controversy later, but George Payton is building the Broncos in a Mike Zimmer fashion, beefing up the secondary, and also drafting the heir apparent in the second round at running back in Javonte Williams, with Drew Lock ranking first in NFL interceptions and 31st in catchable pass rate, and Teddy Bridgewater not seen as a downfield threat. This team sets up to run at a top five clip with Williams and Melvin Gordon.
I've got the Rams. You know the story on Cam Akers already out for the year. Let's talk about Daryl Henderson, the third round pick from 2019, who lost his job to Akers last year. Head coach Sean McVay says that Henderson's an every down back, but also notes that durability is a concern. Last year, in his nine games with at least 25 snaps, Henderson averaged 54 rushing yards, 14 receiving yards, and 4.5 yards per carry, which is, yeah, kind of like right in the middle. Worrisome to me, though, Henderson was notably worse than league average in positive run rate, worse in yards after contact, worse in catch rate. He's now going roughly the fourth round for Daryl Henderson. He needs to be a materially better back than the guy that we saw last year. Let's go to the Philadelphia Eagles. Scott.
Yeah, so Philadelphia Eagles, Jalen Reagor's just getting healthy as Devonta Smith injures his MCL and will miss a few weeks, but he should be ready for the season. I think the bigger news is the offense. They're catering the offense to Ertz. That's the plan. That's what they're installing, an offense that will cater to Hurts' skills. So I'm starting to like him a lot more if they're not going to try to shoehorn an old offense in there.
Let's go to the Miami Dolphins. What's the one thing people need to know from their offseason?
The Miami Dolphins, Chan Gailey is gone, and co-offensive coordinators Eric Studsville and George Godsey spent the entire offseason developing an offense around Tua. And at Bama, Tua had the top passer rating in the country in 2018 and 2019 on throws between 1 and 19 yards, relying heavily on yak. That's yards after catch. They brought in Will Fuller and his 5.5 yak and drafted noted yakker Jalen Waddle. Leads me to believe it's going to be a short, pass-heavy offense for the Dolphins this year.
In Minnesota, they spent first and third round picks on their offensive line in an effort to improve one of the league's worst lines. But Christian Darrisaw and Wyatt Davis both missed the entire offseason program, and they've been in and out of the lineups in training camp as well. Fantasy owners need to be prepared for the prospect of a Vikings offensive line that could even be worse than last year's, particularly early on in the season. Let's go to the Dallas Cowboys. What's the one thing, Scott, that people need to know?
So we've all seen that the wide receivers are doing a ton in practice. That's great and all. But the plan is to be more conservative with Dak, apparently. He's got a slight injury right now, possibly running less. So maybe those six touchdowns rushing are going to be gone this season. And they're also talking about lightening Zeke's role throughout the season with the playoffs in mind. And I think that's a very important thing to know.
Let's go to the New England Patriots. Matt.
They were the most run-heavy team in the league last year under Cam Newton, and Bill Belichick does not want you to believe that was going to happen again this year. They added Jonnu, Hunter Henry, Nelson Aguilar, and Kendrick Bourne in free agency. And did you know that Kendrick Bourne, as the nondescript fourth wide receiver in San Francisco, would have tied for the team lead in red zone targets with 10? And Jonnu had 17, and Hunter Henry had 14, and Cam only threw 36 passes inside the 20 last year. They're going to throw more inside the red zone. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it's Cam is yet to be seen, though.
I'm warming up to Jonnu again, and you guys are going to get sick about me hearing about me talk about him this preseason as well.
There's a very long track history of, you know, top five tight ends being the number one or number two option on their team. Jonnu's almost guaranteed to be that on his team.
I think he is. Let's go to the Saints. They're in the middle of a quarterback battle between Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston. Sean Payton had previously said that both quarterbacks will get time with the first team, and they are doing that, but there's no early indication who's going to win this job. But fantasy owners should be rooting for Jameis Winston here. Keep in mind, we are 1 year removed from him being QB1 in many scoring systems. When in his mythical 30-30 year, when if your league did not subtract for interceptions, Jameis Winston was probably the top scoring quarterback in 2019.
We're less than a year removed from Taysom Hill having a bunch of QB1 games
in
relief last year.
That is true.
So.
What's the one thing people need to know from the Giants?
So most people, I'm sure, know about Saquon Barkley. They're taking it easy. There's been reports that they might ease him back so slow we might not see him till week three. That's not what I want to mention here. What I want to mention here,
okay.
See how I go too? It's like the A+,
sneaking
A-.
Sneaking it in, yes.
Is Sterling Shepard has been the standout at camp, and a lot of people wonder who's that receiver that you should have after Galladay. It seems like it's Shepard. It's not any of the other options.
I don't have his ADP in front of me, but man, he's going like round 14. Sterling Shepard, you'll be able to get him very late, and Kenny Galladay may not even start the season. What's the one thing people need to know from the Texans?
Titans.
Thank you.
There we go. According to Warren Sharp, the Titans ran the ball only 4% of the time last year when trailing. 4%.
Jeez.
Compared to
That's
the league
nuts.
Average of 35%.
Okay.
And their defense is bad, and it's still bad, ranking 28th in defensive efficiency by Pro Football Focus, 28th in expected points allowed per play, and they cut both starting corners. Bud Dupree was their big add in free agency. This tells me this defense is going to be bad, and this offense is going to throw all year to Julio and A.J. Brown.
That could end up happening. A lot of people really like Tannehill this year. In Pittsburgh, the offensive line is ranked 29th by Pro Football Focus, and the team barely addressed it in the offseason. It's got four new starters and one returning starter who's playing out of position. Last year, Ben Roethlisberger had the shortest time to throw of all quarterbacks in the league, 2.3 seconds. That's it. And I don't know how your offense can get that much better when your line's this bad. A lot of concern over the offensive line that did not get addressed adequately by the Steelers in the offseason. Let's go to the Atlanta Falcons. Scott?
Yeah, so I'm going to go to the running back position here where Mike Davis is the starter, but do we know that he can be the full role? So who's the second back there? They have Cordarrelle Patterson listed as running back, and he's getting the reps in front of Quadri Allison, whose career longest run is 6 yards, and a very small rookie in Javian Hawkins. We might see a world where Cordarrelle Patterson is a running back in fantasy this year.
I can fall forward for 6 yards.
Yeah, two of you could.
Yeah.
Let's go to the Cincinnati Bengals. What's the one thing people need to know?
Red alert. The Athletic's Cincy beat writers Jay Morrison and Paul Dana reported earlier this week that the offense is an absolute disaster. The pass rush continued to break through the offensive line. Nearly every pass that wasn't wildly off the mark was heavily contested, broken up, or intercepted. Mm. Multiple turnovers are happening during every practice. Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins are losing battles with Eli Apple. Jamar Chase is dropping wide open passes. And the Bengals have a bad defense. So this isn't like
a great defense
they're going against. Yeah. It's bad in Cincy right now. Let's hope it changes, because Burrow's going to be running if that offensive line can't protect him.
So all the Jamar Chase one-handed highlights, they're glossing over the bad stuff that's going on.
In San Francisco, I'm tempted to talk about the quarterback situation, but everybody's tracking it really closely, and I think you know that.
And we might talk about it next segment.
Was drafted, right? And, it's going to come up again soon. But let me mention this. The Niners offensive line got two key boosts in the offseason. They re-signed left tackle Trent Williams, and then they acquired veteran center Alex Mack. Trent Williams was the number one ranked tackle last year. Alex Mack is a steady veteran. 49ers line gets even better in the offseason. Scott, what's the one thing people need to know about the Cardinals?
A.J. Green has been lights out in camp, leading many to speculate that last year's issues were lack of effort and not wanting to be there anymore rather than being washed. Insert Kaiser Sose straightening his leg out meme as he walks to Arizona.
Let's go to Jacksonville. Matt.
The Jags ranked 32nd in the league in rushing attempts last year, and you insert Urban Meyer and Daryl Bevel and Travis Etienne? That's how he pronounced it.
Okay.
Etienne.
All right. Yeah, he would know.
Yeah. According to Pro Football Focus, in 2019 and 20, while with the Lions, Bevel ranked 11th in the NFL among offensive coordinators in neutral game script run play rate. The Lions also ran the ball at the 11th highest clip from inside the five, and Urban Meyer has a long track record of using quarterbacks to run the ball from inside the five-yard line.
In Baltimore, there's a lot of flux at the wide receiver position. The team drafted Rashad Bateman, who has looked very good so far in training camp. Baltimore brought in Sammy Watkins, a perpetual career-long underperformer. Watkins and Bateman likely battle for a starting spot. Marquise Brown has got a significant hamstring injury you need to watch. He may not be available for the start of the season and or may miss a bunch of time. And Miles Boykin might be cut altogether, which is a bummer. He was one of my deep sleepers at this time last year. Oops. All right, two teams left. What is the one thing people need to know about the Chicago Bears?
Damian Williams is impressing as a receiver while Tariq Cohen is still out. He's got that number two running back role between the tackles locked up. Now it looks like he might get some passing work.
Yeah, I just drafted him in Matt's Empire League. And finally, the Chargers.
Oh, it's passing time because new offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi loves to pass. The Chargers already led the NFL in plays per game last season, and in Lombardi's short tenure as the Lions OC, he had them pass the ball in 66% of plays. At that clip, Justin Herbert would be throwing 46 passes per game and would be on pace for 5,720 yards and 41 touchdowns in a 17-game year.
I would take that.
It's Air Bear time.
Oh, is it ever Air Bear time? You can draft him in a guillotine league if you'd like. Learn more about the new, freshest format in fantasy sports, the Guillotine League at guillotineleagues.com. When we come back, the training camp battles we'll be watching throughout the month of August when we return to Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back. Fantasy Football Weekly. I'm Paul Ciarci and GuillotineLeagues.com. My co-hosts are Matt Harrison and Scott Fish. I have challenged both of you to come up with the training camp battles that we need to follow. Let's begin with you, Scott. What's the first one?
Let me turn on my mic here. Gabriel Davis, a sleeper that a guy we liked last year, a guy we liked coming into this year, but unfortunately, he's battling with Manny Sanders, who they picked up, the Buffalo Bills picked up this offseason, and it seems like Manuel Sanders has beaten him out for the job almost already. They're still battling it out, but he's above him on the depth chart and getting more looks with the ones.
Well, we'll see how that plays out, but it's not the outcome most of us want.
Yeah, me and you are in we're going for Gabe.
We are, for sure. Matt, what is the training camp battle you're following next?
Andy Dalton versus Justin Fields versus Nick Foles. It's worth noting that Andy Dalton is sporting a sweet new red mustache and an Oakley-style orange reflective visor and the number 9 in the Bears. So he kind of looks like mustache Jim McMahon.
Oh, it's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Speaking of Fields, everything out of camp is that the Bears don't want to be forced into playing him right away. And Dalton has looked steady while Fields has impressed with his athleticism and velocity on his ball. But he hasn't overtly taken the job from Dalton as of yet. My guess is Dalton probably starts September and Fields is coming later in the fall.
I was recently in Chicago on the Score 670, my friends there, and they asked the two co-hosts I was with, what's the week number in which the transfer happens from Dalton to Fields?
Mm-hmm.
And one host answered third week and one answered the fifth week.
I was going week four when they play the Lions. That's an easy enough matchup.
Soft, that's right. Yeah. Soft matchup. I like bringing in the rookie at that time.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to our next training camp battle. Scott.
Jacob Eason and Sam Ellinger for the Colts. It's Eason's job right now. That is what Frank Reich says.
But they're going to Foles.
They're going to battle it out, but this first preseason game, Eason's going to get the first half. Ellinger's going to get the second half. Eason's the big arm guy, but Sam is the dual threat guy, and there's something there that they might want to go to him because he's looked good in camp.
Yeah,
he's
and really Eason good. Hasn't. Yeah. By the way, no relation to Tony Eason. I looked it up because I thought there might be a
That's
connection
what all
there.
The listeners were
they're
thinking,
not.
Too.
There's no connection.
Everybody was thinking about
it. Well, yeah, who doesn't want to tap into the Tony Eason pedigree line?
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody does. Matt, what's the next training camp battle we're following?
You touched on it a little bit, Charch, and it's Jameis Winston versus Taysom Hill. And everything that I've read on this one is it's a dead heat and possibly that both play in week one. But the camp notes kind of talk about both being unimpressive and mostly working as run game coordinators. If that's the case, the Saints look like a run-heavy team, as they were last year. They ran the fifth most in the NFL last year. So if that's the case, I'd put my money on Hill as the starter right now. However, Hill's just not the passer. Winston is. Making him the full-time starter would also take away his ability to be Weapon X out there. But right now, the tea leaves trend towards Hill. I'd put it as a 53-47 kind of lead right now.
I'm rooting for Winston because I don't think Hill can pass.
I'm rooting for Hill because I have him on a lot of teams.
All right. and you need him to start or else you can never start him.
Right.
Correct. I mean, if Taysom Hill doesn't start a game, you can never put Taysom Hill in your starting lineup.
Do you think
lineup.
You're going to be comfortable starting either of the Saints quarterbacks this year?
Yeah. I think
like
I
if
think
if Winston's the starter, you know Hill's coming into the game to steal some stuff, and whether it's red zone or it's the middle of the field.
Yeah, but I don't think he'll impact his passing that much, and that's all I want Winston for anyway. I think Winston can be startable if he's getting almost all the work.
To me, I think if Hill wins the job, I think that we have a clear cut path of who's the starter and who's going to play the most snaps.
Scott. What's the next training camp battle we're following?
Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater over there in Denver. Right now, it sounds like the slight edge is to Lock, but Teddy has been unleashing some 15-plus yard downfield passes.
Well, like and, 16 and yards?
And making them look good. Drew Lock, after a bad first day, went 4 or 5 straight days without an interception against that very decent defense. Mm-hmm. So that's one to watch, but right now it sounds like Lock might just have the slight edge.
All right, I'm rooting for Drew Lock.
Yeah, better for fantasy.
It's better for fantasy. Yeah. And this is a fantasy show. That's why we care about that. Matt, what's the next training camp battle we're following?
49ers quarterbacks, Jimmy G versus Trey Lance. Oh. And everyone in 49ers camp is fawning over Trey Lance.
Yep.
His athleticism and running ability have all the Niners beat writers drooling. They've said they've unleashed him as a runner in scrimmages, and while the crowd's there, and it's kind of like when the Beatles came to America for the first
very
time.
Similar. Very similar. Very similar.
However, Kyle Shanahan has been quoted multiple times that it's Jimmy G's team, and it would be extremely hard for Lance to beat out Garoppolo for the job by week one. Shanahan has also said that Jimmy G's been really good in practice, although his mobility is just not what it used to be after ankle injuries plagued his 2020 season and an ACL in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
It's only a matter of time, and it's coming.
Yeah, it seems like it's coming sooner than later for Trey Lance. I'm fully on board.
Yep. The most interesting fact about the 49ers is they've installed spittoons along the sidelines for the beat reporters and,
for all
and
the coaches drool.
To spit all that drool. Saliva
right.
in.
Are they drool tunes?
I don't know.
All right, Scott, what's the next training camp battle we're following?
Let's stay in Denver with Javonte Williams and Melvin Gordon. Beat reporters and people close to the team have consistently said, it's Melvin's job, even though a lot of fantasy people think Javonte's going to take it over. And he might at some point. They've said Javonte looks great. He looks great without pads. He looks great with pads. But at this point, it's Melvin's job, but there is a battle there.
I mean, we don't want to hear that.
No,
I mean,
no.
We always want the new guy. We always want the fresh blood.
Yep.
But I think if it's like most situations, the veteran starts the season getting most of the work.
Yep.
And, you know, that's how it goes. All right, Matt, what's the next training camp battle we're following?
I got the Arizona Cardinals running back competition. That's Chase Edmonds versus James Conner. Edmonds had a 45% snap rate last year. Kenyon Drake had about 54%. That seems like a split backfield to me.
Yes.
And Edmonds, when asked about being an RB1 this year, said, and I quote, "We're both going to play a lot this year. We're both going to make plays. So RB1 really don't mean much."
Means a lot to me.
Yeah, it means a lot to fantasy players. What's interesting is Edmonds has a bit more versatility. Mm-hmm. They lined him up in the slot exactly 99 times.
Nine times.
There we go.
That's something that James Conner really doesn't do. At the very best, you're looking at a 60-40 split for one of these backs. Due to injury concerns for Connor, that favors Edmonds. But even in games where Kenyon Drake was absent last year, Edmonds did very little with the opportunity.
On a lot of touches,
I know. It was very disappointing. All right, let's get to our next training camp battle. Scott.
Okay, so the next one I have is the Chargers receivers with Josh Palmer, Tyron Johnson, and Jalen Guyton. Right now, this depth chart might surprise you. The order listed now from coming out of their camp, Josh Palmer ahead of Tyron Johnson and Jalen Guyton. All three have made great plays in camp. Williams is also, they say his connection is amazing with Herbert this camp. But right now it sounds like Palmer's running slightly ahead of them despite they're all making great plays.
All right.
That offense might go crazy.
All right. When we come back, we will work through a dynasty or empire rookie draft by ADP. Here's who you all, America, are taking first, second, third, fourth, all the way through the first round. And we'll tell you if you're getting it right or wrong. Who's going in the right place? Who's not? Who should you be reaching for in your dynasty or empire rookie draft when we return to Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back to Fantasy Football Weekly. I'm Paul Ciarchi, and my co-hosts are Matt Harrison and Scott Fish. Getting you ready for draft season. I'm already drafting in a bunch of leagues. I know you guys are too.
Yep.
But for most people, they're just, you know, they're starting to warm up to it now, starting to think about their draft. It's going to happen in like 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Yeah, Ciarchi, we had a rookie draft going on this week.
We did. It gets real thin this year.
It does.
Real thin, really fast. Yeah. And you're going to hear about how thin it gets. Really, next segment, the next two segments, this segment's going to be filled with guys who we're really interested in. The next two segments, we're going to go through the rookie drafts by average draft position for those in dynasty leagues, keeper leagues, empire leagues, and we'll identify who's going in what position and then whether or not that player's going too high, too low, or about right. We'll do the first round this segment. We'll do the second round next segment. And man, it just falls off a cliff at one point in round two. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that when we get there. So first, let me mention this. We are doing a one quarterback league. So we are not doing super flex. We're not doing two quarterback because in those leagues, it moves the quarterbacks just right to the top. And here, we're assuming you're in a one quarterback league, which is still the way most people play. We like super flex, but play the way you want to play.
Right. We don't league shame.
The average draft position at number one is Najee Harris. Pittsburgh running back Najee Harris. Is that too high, too low, or about right?
That's where I got him on my dynasty ranks at Shock Fantasy. So, you know, promo code radio if you want to go be a member there. But Najee Harris is exactly where I got him. I'm not concerned about the poor offensive line. Good running backs have overcome poor offensive lines in the past and been good fantasy producers. So
Dalvin Cook's done it many years in a row.
Just fine with Najee right there.
Okay. Offensive line worries me a little bit as well. I think there are others you can make a case for in this spot, but do you have a problem with it here? Scott?
No.
Najee Harris is the first pick overall?
I don't. He wouldn't be my first because generally in a league where you're picking one overall, unless you traded for it, you're the worst team, and I'd rather go after running backs when I'm starting to contend than grabbing a running back over one overall. So he's not my one, but so I guess...
I guess he's going too high.
I guess he's going too high. It's still fair, but he's at least a couple spots too high for me.
All right. Average draft position, the second rookie off the board. This is America's average draft position. Mm-hmm. Cincinnati wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase. He was the first wide receiver taken in the draft. Scott, is this too low, too high, or about right?
Well, based on what I just said, obviously my number one is probably Chase or the guy we'll talk about next. I'm completely fine with him at two if you want to take the guy we're going to talk about next at one. But it's fair. It's fine. You know, it's right on the spot. I'd probably take him one, though.
I've got Chase at my number four rookie off the board, so this is too high for me. There's two guys that I would like a lot more than Mr. Chase, and there's a lot of mouths to feed in that Cincinnati offense.
You know,
running back lover.
I'm kind of with you as well. I think it is a little bit too high. And they're only, you know, this particular year, there are only four running backs I even want to draft. And so I think I would want to have gotten a running back by here, but then there's the next guy who I think might also be a better player for this particular spot. The number three average draft position player is Kyle Pitts, going off the board in redraft leagues at tight end four.
Yeah.
What do you think about Kyle Pitts going off the board at position number three?
Well, it's ridiculous for redraft leagues, number four tight end overall, but this guy is a generational talent from all accounts. I think that you can make the case for him at number one, and he's definitely one of my number. He's probably my number two guy right now, so I think he is a little bit too low on this list. I'd take Pitts either number one or number two.
Counterpoint on Pitts: last year, Russell Gage in the Atlanta Falcons offense, his stat line would have been tight end three overall.
There we go.
Do you think Kyle Pitts is their third option in the receiving game or second?
It's probably second at this point.
So I think he can. I'm not saying he will, but it would take a historic year. But I think he can end up in that spot. So I'm fine with it. Kyle Pitts is who I would have taken at one. Once again, I think if you're picking 101 legitimately, taking a difference changer at a position like that, that could be on your team 6-7 years and not have to worry about the tight end position for years. That's probably where I would have leaned, so I'm going to go with too low on him.
I went too low on Kyle Pitts for all the reasons that you guys have mentioned as well. I would have taken him first overall.
Yep.
Let's go to the fourth average draft position, and that's Jacksonville running back Travis, the running back formerly known as ETN, but now we find out it's Achane. Jacksonville running back Travis Achane.
He says he's fine with both, so okay. Do what you want.
He is fine with both.
Scott, with the at number four, is this too low, too high, or about right?
This is exactly where I have him, so I feel it's just right. In fact, the amount of top 12 fantasy running backs, like running backs that finish in the top 12 that have like 150-plus carries and 50-plus receptions, which I think Achane or ETN is going to do many times in the next few years, it's astronomical. Like that combination vaults, it's like a rushing quarterback. That combination of catches and carries vaults you into top 12 conversations. Mm-hmm. I think that's him. He just needs to get James Robinson out of the way a little bit.
Matt, you feel any differently about Travis ETN?
Well, if Scott's saying that he's got like all this potential, I don't know why you wouldn't pick him higher. I'd pick him higher than Ja'Marr Chase, so I think he's a little bit too low. I think he's a top three rookie for me.
I feel this is a spot too high, at least one spot too high for Travis, the running back formerly known as Travis ETN. And I like the guy who's at ADP 5.
Oh, you do.
Better. And that is Denver running back Javonte Williams, Matt. It at position number 5 for Dynasty and Empire Leagues, is Javonte Williams going too high, too low, or about right?
I think that this is a just right position for him personally. I think a lot of people are going to be scared off that Melvin Gordon is there. Mm-hmm. And the production might suffer a little bit in the first year, but he's definitely a guy who can take over that role and really be a bell cow. And I think that's what George Payton wants in his new look Broncos.
Scott, do you feel differently?
So I feel like you guys very much love the running back position a lot more than I do in Dynasty. I generally build around younger wide receivers and players like that. And then I go after and get the running backs when I know I'm about to make a run.
That's because you're really smart.
That's how I play Dynasty. So I actually have Javonte Williams one spot lower than this. So I will go he's one spot too high.
I think this is a spot too low, but I'll make my case. I think Williams could go. I think you could make a case if you're running back needy and you are making a run. You could make a case for, to me, Javonte Williams as high as pick 2 or 3.
Okay.
At potential to be a very special back, which only a couple of runners do have in this draft, I believe. Big, fast, elusive, gets goal line looks, but I'm really doing it for next year.
Yeah.
Melvin Gordon, I don't think is going to be on Denver next year, and that is why I think Javonte Williams becomes the bell cow by 2022, and I want him on my roster now, so I'm ready for next season. At average draft position number 6 in Dynasty and Empire rookie drafts, Philadelphia wide receiver Devonta Smith. Scott, is this too high, too low, or just right?
This is the flip with Javonte Williams for me. This is what Devonta Smith did in college. I love to see it come to Philadelphia. I know he's hurt right now. He's got the MCL, but I think eventually he's going to be that guy for the Eagles there. I would have him a spot higher.
Okay, Matt?
Yeah, I think he's the clear number one wide receiver in Philly, so I think he's just right.
I think it's about right, too. Now, his small build to me is a worry, but he can be an electric game breaker. My worry is he's got Tavon Austin downside to him, but he's got Tyreek Hill upside to his game.
It was an undersized group of wide receivers this year, big time, too.
You know, we've talked about this a little bit in previous year's shows, Fantasy Football Weekly. The guys that have sustained greatness more often than not, like multi-year, are bigger-bodied receivers.
The Demaryius Thomases, the Terrell Owens, the Andre Johnson, the Calvin.
DeAndre Hopkins.
There's a reason they call it prototypical.
Right. And so, you know, the smaller guys, it tends to be much more erratic, and I think the bust rate's higher. That's some of my worries for Devonta Smith. At average draft position number 7 is the first one that I really, really don't like. San Francisco running back Trey Sermon. Matt, too high, too low, or just right?
You didn't even have to influence me on this one. I'm right there with you. I think that this is way too high. They drafted two running backs in San Francisco, and Kyle Shanahan is from the family tree of Shanahanigans.
Yes.
There's running back Shanahanigans going on all over the place there, and you're never going to feel quite confident that one running back has taken over that job. So he's way too high for me.
So I know you feel differently, Scott.
No, I like him more than you, but he's a guy I took in a rookie draft in the mid-second, right before the cliff goes off, mm-hmm. and I felt good about that.
Yeah.
I don't feel good about him in the mid-first. That's crazy talk to me. There are at least, I think I'm counting three or four wide receivers I take above Sermon. So, this is way too
high.
Right.
We all agree that pick seven is too high for Trey Sermon. I don't think he's a special talent. He was taken in the third round, but many draft services graded him into the fifth, sixth, and seventh round. And so I think it was a reach pick. And as you mentioned, Kyle Shanahan simply isn't a workhorse coach with his runners.
I've got a couple quarterbacks, a running back, and a few wide receivers above Trey Sermon.
Well, a perfect time to bring up pick number eight.
Yeah.
Jacksonville quarterback Trevor Lawrence at pick eight. Is this too high, too low, or just right? Scott.
I think quarterbacks have gotten too deep lately. We're in a one quarterback league. I still have a couple players I like above taking a quarterback this high in the first. If I'm at the end of the first, maybe, because you're probably a champion or close and it might be a luxury pick for you. But here I'm going with a guy that's three spots below.
Okay.
You know, when they talk about guys coming out in the draft being the can't-miss quarterback, there's only a few that come to mind. And, one was Andrew Luck, and he was great for a number of fantasy years. And the one since then was Trevor Lawrence. Even Patrick Mahomes didn't really get that billing when he came through the draft.
Well, he was a fourth quarterback, third quarterback taken.
Yeah, he was. So I think that Lawrence is just about right here, because if you truly believe that he is one of those generational talents at this position, you can take him here, and then you can feel like you have a good quarterback for a really long time.
Yeah, I think this is about right. He's the most pro-ready quarterback since Luck, as you mentioned, and I think people forget about his running aptitude.
Yeah.
He can be four or five rushing touchdowns a year,
yep.
and, he has the upside to be 35 passing touchdowns, and then he gets into really special fantasy production territory for Trevor Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
Pick number nine by your average draft positions, Miami wide receiver Jalen Waddle. Tell me if you think this is too high, too low, or about right, Scott. I think we're on Matt.
We're on me this time, yeah. I think that's a little too high for me. There's a couple of wide receivers that I like above Waddle here, and there's one running back that I like above him as well. So Waddle, I would move down to about 12, 13, 14, 15, somewhere in there.
All right. Wow, that's way lower than I have had.
All right, Scott.
Yeah, it's only one spot too high for me because there is, one spot too low or what? Yeah.
So he's about right. If he's within a spot, he's about right.
He's about right. There's one wide receiver coming up that's actually my wide receiver two, so I guess I was wrong on Devonta Smith earlier. I have another guy coming up as my wide receiver two. But he's about right because I have Trevor Lawrence below both of them.
I have Jalen Waddle about right here at pick number nine. I worry that he's going to get lost in the shuffle between Will Fuller, Devontae Parker, and Tua didn't impress me last year, but in time, I think he will become better than Will Fuller and Devontae Parker, at least has the upside to be. At pick number 10, New York Jets running back Michael Carter. Is this too high or too low, Scott?
We're in a spot where I like wide receivers more than running backs. I think he's in a really good spot. I think that, he could be their, he's probably going to be their lead back. I'm probably taking him at the end of the second, because there are one or two guys I probably
end of the second round?
End of the first, excuse me. But it's not a terrible spot in that 10, 11, 12 range.
All right, Michael Carter, pick 10. You cool with that?
I'd probably have him 11, 12, probably closer to that.
I'd move him up. I think that he's the only rookie running back in this class that has the distinct possibility, besides Najee, of course, of being a bell cow in his offense. And that's why I'd like Michael Carter close to five or six in rookie drafts.
You took all my talking points except one. The Jets offensive line's got two first-round picks from the last 2 years, and it's better than people think. All right, pick number 11, Baltimore wide receiver Rashad Bateman. Is this too high, too low, or about right, Matt?
I think it's about right. I got one guy ahead of him on the wide receiver chart, but Bateman looks like he is wide receiver one already in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. Scott, same.
He's my wide receiver two overall behind Chase, so I would have put him closer to the mid first round.
Okay, and the last ADP rookie is New York Jets wide receiver Elijah Moore, having a fantastic camp. Too high, too low, or about right?
Perfect spot for him.
Perfect spot, right about here.
Yeah. I talked a little bit about him before, and I'd move him up a spot or two.
Yeah, I would too, because I would have him above Carter and Sermon.
All right, but that's about right.
Yeah,
We are pick differential.
End of the first.
That's about right.
10.
When we come back, hour number two of Fantasy Football Weekly, we'll get into round two, where things really hit a cliff here, and
it
you got to work hard to find some value. at that stage of your dynasty or empire draft. Stay tuned. Fantasy Football Weekly continues in moments. Fantasy Football Weekly, Paul Charchian, Scott Fish, and Matt Harrison with you. If you haven't yet tried a guillotine league, we encourage you to try the freshest new way to play fantasy football. 18 teams start the season. At the end of every week, the low-scoring team gets cut, and their entire team goes to the waiver wire, where pandemonium ensues. You've never had a chance to bid on guys like Alvin Kamara, Patrick Mahomes. These are Keenan Allen, a whole draft of players, never hits the waiver wire. It is the...
Hey, this year, if Saquon Barkley does miss a couple of games early up,
he's going to hit the waiver wire.
Maybe that team hits the... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then you got to decide, a little bit like when Christian McCaffrey got hurt early last year, when's the time to get in on that bidding? Because if you put in too much of your free agent budget on Christian McCaffrey early last year, all he did was weigh down your team. You were short on money, and then you got cut, and here's Christian McCaffrey again on the waiver wire. Mm-hmm. And then somebody else would pick him up, spend a bunch of money, and then they'd get cut. And Christian McCaffrey kept cycling through. And I bet at the end of the year, in our $1,000 fab league at guillotineleagues.com, I bet he picked up on average around $2,500 of fab got spent on him churning through teams over the course of the season. It's round number two of our Dynasty Empire rookie draft. By your ADP, the national average, this is where you're taking everybody, but we're establishing whether or not you guys are getting it wrong or right with each of your selections. The first round went Najee Harris, Ja'Marr Chase, Kyle Pitts, Travis, the running back formerly known as Travis Etienne.
The ancient one.
Javonte Williams, Devontae Smith, Trey Sermon, who we really didn't like this spot. Mm-hmm. Trevor Lawrence at pick number 8, Jalen Waddle, Michael Carter, Rashad Bateman, and in the 12th spot, Elijah Moore. Now it's round number 2.
Mm-hmm.
And the highest ADP player left here is San Francisco quarterback Trey Lance. Too high, too low, or just right, Scott?
I think it's just about right in this list. I probably would have had him like 12th or so. So like I would almost rather have a quarterback like Trey Lance in a league like that, in a dynasty league, just because I think his rushing upside is so huge. Mm-hmm. You can play around with other starters until you hit one on one of these big guys that becomes a Josh Allen or a Patrick Mahomes or Kyler Murray or something. And I think Trey Lance has that potential. So I probably have him a spot or two higher just because I have Lawrence a little lower and I have Sermon a little lower, stuff like that.
Okay. Matt.
I think Scott stole most of the thunder there. If you think Trey Lance can be Josh Allen in 2 years or Lamar Jackson in 2 years, gosh, that's a pretty good pick right here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's first pick in the second round. I'd take him. I think he might be a little too low.
Yeah, I got way too low. I think he should go in the middle of the first round. I think you're off by half a round
that's
on Trey Lance.
In one. Wow, that's that is high.
In fact, I'm ready to go first quarterback off the board.
I'm fine with
because
it.
Of the upside he brings.
I think that's kind of where we both landed.
Right? I'm learning what your next draft strategy in the league we're in is about to be.
That's right. Let's go to pick number 2 of the second round. Carolina wide receiver Terrace Marshall. Matt, is this too high, too low, or about right?
You know, Scott was speaking glowingly about Terrace Marshall, and I've heard nothing but the same. It's been all good out of Terrace Marshall in camp, and I have him a little bit higher on my list of wide receivers.
So this is way too low for me. I love Terrace Marshall. Right after the draft happened, I was doing drafts, right after the draft. I was consistently taking him at 201, and so it's already too low.
Well, it's already 202. It's only 202.
Yeah.
So it's about right.
But now he's just glowing in camp. He's going to take over. Like, he played 83% slot in college. He's taking over that Curtis Samuel role. Mm-hmm. He's reunited with Joe Brady there. I love everything about this 6'4", big slot guy, Terrace Marshall. I would take him in the first round.
Do you have Terrace Marshall above Jalen Waddle?
I do. Yeah,
I do too.
I have him way up there.
Yeah, unique downfield skill set that makes him a nice match for Sam Darnold's arm. You never get a 6'4" slot receiver.
Yeah, and he can play outside.
Yeah, like, and I'm sure he could, but I don't know that he will.
Yeah, he doesn't need to with Robbie Anderson on one more year.
Yeah, that's probably true. The third pick in the second round in Dynasty Empire drafts by your average draft position is Justin Fields. Is this too high, too low, or just right, Scott?
It's pretty much what we said with Lance. It's just about right because the guys going below him, I have a lot less confidence in as players at their positions. When Fields is a guy that could be a franchise quarterback for 10 years and, you know, have a decent rushing upside.
Matt, you like Justin Fields here?
Yeah, we're teetering very, very close to
the
cliff now.
Coming.
Here it comes.
We're not at the cliff yet.
I can see it,
close.
Though.
Yes.
I can kick a rock, and it's about to go
you
over.
You two are my Thelma and Louise, and we are driving fast right at the edge of the cliff.
Are we all holding hands?
I'm the Brad Pitt in this example, by the way, just to be clear.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Justin Fields, to me, this is about right, maybe a little too low. I prefer Lance, but I love that Fields can give you the passing and the rushing and the athleticism and the deep balls, and those are special quarterbacks that can go win leagues. So I would not mind. I wouldn't have a problem if somebody took Justin Fields a little higher than the third pick of the second round.
Now, Charge, is this the end of a tier? Because I'm looking at the rest of the rookies, and this is kind of the edge of a tier for me.
If we're at the end of the tier, I'm going to ask you a question. Would you take Trey Sermon at this end of this tier?
This is the right spot.
This is the right spot for Trey
Sermon. Right here. I'll slot in Trey Sermon right here. The fourth pick in the second round by your national average for average draft position among rookies, Arizona wide receiver Rondell Moore. Matt, is this too high, too low, or about right?
Now, talking about the tiers, I think there's two players in the next tier, and it's the next two players on this board, and then after that, it gets nasty. So I think Rondale Moore is in a good spot right here. A little nervous that there might not be enough balls to go around in Arizona, but I think that he's in a good spot here.
Okay. Yeah. As we mentioned on the show when we did this team preview, Rondale Moore, I liken him to a squirrel in the road. Like, he changes direction so ridiculous, and there have been so many camp videos of him breaking ankles.
Yeah.
I still have him above Sermon, so
we're not even
to that point for me. So
it's roadkill Moore in a different way because he's breaking other people's ankles.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. Yes. But he's only 5'7", so he's going to be the roadkill sooner or later in Rondale Moore, and that's the worry for me.
It's like a moped running over a squirrel, you know?
He's going to run from the slot. You know, Larry Fitzgerald's gone, so that frees up all those slot targets, and you get the quick twitch athleticism, incredibly fast, the 4.3 speed for Rondale Moore. And he's going to get the bubble screens, the gadget plays, the periodic runs. We just need him to stay healthy. At 5'7", I'm just worried he's going to get mauled over the middle. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, any catch could be the last for Rondale Moore. Let's go to pick number 5 of average draft positions, rookie drafts in Dynasty and Empire leagues. Zach Wilson, New York Jets quarterback. Is this too high, too low, or about right? And we're on
I think it's Scott's turn.
Scott goes first.
All right, let's do it. It's fine. It's fine where it's at in a one quarterback league. I think we're at that cliff where I'd be like, do I want Wilson? Do I want Sermon? I mean, it's a one quarterback league. Maybe I do take Sermon. So I think it's fair. It's right where we should be.
He's definitely got that quarterback upside that we've been talking about. Not as shiny as the other three quarterbacks we talked about.
Because Zach Wilson doesn't have the rushing upside.
No, he doesn't. So
but he's he can look really good at times.
Yeah, he can. Raw talent for sure. So I think this is the end of the tier, and we are now at the cliff, and here we go, over the edge.
Yeah, the edge is here for sure. Pick number 6. In by your average draft position in the second round is New York Giants wide receiver Kadarius Toney, and man, is this wrong.
Yeah.
Matt, go ahead and elucidate the many reasons.
They got like 15 wide receivers there, including Kenny Golladay. They got the worst offensive line in the league, and Daniel Jones isn't inspiring a lot of confidence. Plus, when Saquon's healthy, he's probably their leading target getter. So I don't think Kadarius Toney might see more than 2 passes a game thrown his way.
Scott?
Yeah, this by the way, Daniel Jones threw 11 touchdown passes last year. That's insane.
So hard to do.
That's a starting quarterback.
Well, but he can still point and laugh at Cam Newton.
Yeah, true.
So there's that.
Very true. Very true.
Cam Newton's pointing and laughing at that run, though, this, of Daniel Jones.
Yeah, this is too...
The one where he tripped himself?
Yeah.
Yes.
This is too high. If I'm going to say something positive, though, just...
You don't have to.
No.
I mean, Kadarius Toney, I mean, he's a subscriber to the podcast right. And the show and everything, but, you know, it doesn't mean we have to placate Kadarius Toney
and was
family.
A member of Tony.
They did invest a first-rounder on him, and they did... And three different teams were trying to trade up into the first to get him. So there's got to be something there. There's not a lot of, you know, he didn't have a lot of stats in college, but he's such a good gadget guy that if they can find, like, Laviska Shenault, if they can find ways to get the ball in his hands, you know, they need things to improve there. So down the line, maybe, but it's still too high for me.
How many of those gadget guys ever work out in fantasy?
Almost none. They're all Tavon Austin. That's the thing.
Percy Harvin.
They rarely work out.
And Percy was the high end of that, but yeah and he wasn't even as fantasy viable as some of these other names that we've mentioned.
No, it's true. I mean, he had some good years, but he was not always fantasy viable either. Mm-hmm. Kadarius Toney, a lot of people don't know, is just a little piece of trivia. He is reprising the role of Tony Soprano in the prequel that HBO is developing right now.
Because Tony is.
Yeah. Pick number 7 in the second round of a Dynasty Empire League by your ADP is Detroit wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown. Scott, I know you like him.
I do like him. I really
too
like
high,
him.
Too high, too low, or about right?
Scott's been talking to St. Brown boys forever.
Yeah, he's too low for me. I would have him a spot or two above this. He's just in a position where he could be the leading target getter on that team. Like, he's going to get a decent amount of targets. He's got the starting. I can't imagine a situation he's not the starting slot receiver there. So, I have him a couple spots higher.
Detroit's going to pass often. They're as a rebuilding team, they're incentivized to give their young players a lot of playing time.
He's staying after practice, just one-handed on the jug machine for, like, he's first in, last out kind of guy.
You're Jared Goff, who's, by the way, I mean, obviously used to throwing to a slot receiver.
Yeah.
And you drop back to pass. Do I throw to Tyrell Williams ever?
No.
Why? What's the point? You know, I'd rather get
Rashad Perriman,
Detroit wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown. We all think this is too low, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Even though we're off the cliff, it's still too low.
We're falling.
We are falling, and we're not going to get up. The 8th pick of the second round by your average draft position in Dynasty Drafts, Philadelphia running back Kenneth Gainwell. Matt, what do you think? Too high, too low, or about right?
It's about right. I mean, it's a guy that could take over in a pinch if Miles Sanders is dinged up again, like he was a little bit last year. So, but they do have Boston Scott there, and I think they have, who's the old Detroit running back that they signed?
Well,
Kerryon Johnson, he's over there too. So, lots of depth chart issues there, but he's got a chance.
Right now, Miles Sanders and Boston Scott are basically splitting carries in camp, and they are working a role in for Gainwell. They've talked about that. It's going to take something for that. The next several people we're going to talk about, I have too high because I have guys in the third I like better.
All right. So. Philadelphia running back Kenneth Gainwell, too high for me at this stage, 8th pick of the second round. He's a poor man's Boston Scott, and inconveniently for him, Boston Scott is already on this team.
Yes.
Pick number 9, by average draft position on rookie drafts in the second round, Pittsburgh tight end Pat Freiermuth. Scott, too high, too low, or about right?
Yeah, it's still too high for me just because there's other guys I like coming up that we're not even going to talk about maybe. Like in the second round, like Nico Collins, who might get a ton of targets for Houston this year.
Earlier in the show.
I love Nico Collins, just a big guy that's going to get a lot of work. And De'Ami Brown for Washington, I like these guys better than guys like Freiermuth. And what do we know what that Pittsburgh offense is going to be next year with Ben gone and those receivers still? Like, I mean, I don't love it.
Yeah, I'm with Scott on the fact that I don't love him in this position either, mostly because tight end rookies are just bad, and if you're taking one this late, it's just cramming up a roster spot on my roster. I'll wait till somebody drops him.
And somebody probably will. Somebody might draft him this year.
I'll pick him up in December and just throw him on my roster and feel good about it then.
Eric Ebron's in the last year of his deal.
Yep.
Pat Freiermuth is going to be the starter for the Steelers next year.
Sure.
And, you know, if you're in a deep enough dynasty or empire league, okay, I can see you pick him here and stash him, and you've got Pittsburgh starter. I don't, to your point, I don't know who's going to throw him the ball, though.
Yeah.
That's a big question mark right now. Mm-hmm. At pick number 10 in Dynasty Empire rookie drafts in the second round, Carolina running back Chuba Hubbard. Matt, you like him here? Too high, too low, or about right?
He's just buried behind Christian McCaffrey. Mm-hmm. It's too high for me. I don't want to put a guy on my roster that is just hidden behind the best running back in football.
It's a little high just because of the receivers I mentioned that I like better. I even like Eskridge in the next round better. I like the guy we're going to talk about next a little better. So he's a little high. On the prep, I'm going to go back to Freiermuth for a second. I'd rather take Jacob Harris in the third or fourth round than I would waste a second rounder on Freiermuth.
With the 11th pick in the second round, by average draft position, Dynasty League players are taking Green Bay rookie wide receiver Amari Rodgers. Is this too high, too low, or about right, Scott?
It's too low because of the three above that I don't want as high as they're going. I have Amari Rodgers just below Nico Collins. So, if you put that, I guess he's a spot too low, maybe then, I guess.
Okay. I think he's a little too
My
low,
voice
too.
Just got you're
trying to, like, convince yourself, and the higher your voice goes.
Maybe.
Is this your lie tell? Is this like when you're not sure and you're, like, maybe even lying?
It's hard to keep track of the draft board when I got three guys that I've pulled and put in the third round.
The reason I think it's a little low for Amari Rodgers is just Alan Lazard and Marquez Valdes-Scantling have steadfastly refused to take a meaningful role in this offense.
Right.
And they've been getting every opportunity. Mm-hmm. So those guys to me are basically dead to me. And Amari Rodgers has got the opportunity.
Let me tell you, Amari Rodgers would have moved up a half a round if Randall Cobb had not gone there.
Yeah.
He would have moved way up.
Mm-hmm. All right. The final pick of the second round and the last player we're going to talk about in our dynasty draft.
Scott wants
and
to
this
talk
is your more. ADP,
Whatever.
America.
Whatever.
Is New England quarterback Mac Jones. All right, Scott, go ahead. If you're going to pshaw him, explain why.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why don't you just tell us the guys you want instead?
It's a one QB league. McCorkle is fine, and he's very pro ready. And honestly, if you're looking for a safe floor quarterback, that he's probably got a decently okay safe floor because he's pretty pro ready. So once he gets the job, but he doesn't have a lot of good weapons except for Jonnu. I know you love Jonnu. But there's at least five guys in the next round I want more than Mac Jones in a one QB league.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a situation where Cam's going to play himself out of that job very long. Mac Jones will be the starter. Or
they will do a risky surgery putting Cam's legs on McCorkle.
Oh, I like it.
Or poke him with a needle, Tyrod style, just to get Mac Jones in.
Don't do that to Kirk Cousins.
Oh.
No needle poking there.
Nope.
When we come back, three tough questions. Is that going to be one of them? Can you poke Kirk Cousins? Find out when we come back to Fantasy Football Weekly.
His wife might have something to say.
Fantasy Football Weekly continues. Paul Charchian from GuillotineLeagues.com. Scott Fish and Matt Harrison, ShockFantasy.com. This is a game we call Three Tough Questions. I will pepper my co-hosts with three tough questions.
Is that a peppering? Three questions?
Yeah, you can pepper with three.
Okay.
Like three specks of pepper?
No. I think it's more like shotgun shot. Mm. I think it's more of that kind of peppering. In my mind, anyway. Maybe because I want to shoot you. That'll be for you guys to decide.
Wow.
Rather than eat you with pepper. So, there's that.
Okay.
Not a cannibal over here.
Tough question number one.
Will Michael Thomas ever return to be a consistent number one wide receiver? And by number one, I don't mean number one overall. I mean wide receiver one on your team. So roughly one of the 12-ish best wide receivers in the league. Will Michael Thomas ever return to be a consistent wide receiver number one? Matt?
I covered that the Saints were one of the most run-heavy teams in football last season, exactly fifth, actually. Was that because Michael Thomas was injured most of the year? Was that Drew Brees being old? Was that Taysom Hill can't really throw? Was that Jameis Winston's not really that accurate? But here's the issue. Thomas waited to have that surgery until late. Why did he do that? We don't really know, but that's not necessarily the mark of a player who's happy with his current team. And he's only 27. He's got a few years of solid play left, and he's got a potential out on his contract after this season. And the Saints have been traditionally one of the teams that have been very cash-strapped as well. Mm-hmm. So I'd say he will return to wide receiver one status. It'll be next year, and it won't be for New Orleans.
Oh!
Okay. I'm gonna add a year to that because he's actually 28. He's going to miss half the season, so I don't think it's going to be this year, you know, coming back from the injury we saw last year. So next year we're talking about 29. If it's on a new team, there's not a very good history outside of like Stephon Diggs or Randy Moss going from Oakland. There's not a good history of a team, a star player changing teams. And then
wide receivers particularly, yes.
We'll see Julio, especially late career. Not a good stretch for him. So I'm going to go no on that just because the age, if he's in New Orleans, it's going to be interesting with the QB situation. If he does move on, that's a bad track record. So I'm going no.
I'll add another reason why the correct answer is no. Soft tissue injuries, man. When they start, it feels like they start piling up and they become easier and easier and easier to get. And, you know, it sounds ridiculous. I'd rather have the ACL injury to come back from, right? That is a one-time deal. The soft tissue stuff mounts and mounts. And Michael Thomas has made his name in fantasy through volume and repetition and catching balls and getting tackled. I don't see how he avoids the soft tissue injuries continuing going forward. The correct answer is no.
Tough question number two.
Considering the injuries to Colts guard Quentin Nelson and quarterback Carson Wentz, what is your level of concern for Jonathan Taylor? None? Some? Or a bowel-loosening level of existential dread? We begin with Scott Fish.
So, I think this is the first time I've ever went this route on this show because I'm usually very optimistic on things.
Yes.
I'm going to go with the bowels one this time.
You're taking the bowels.
I'm going to take the bowels one.
Welcome to the dark side.
He's still going to get a decent amount of work, and his ADP has dropped a good full round now because of these issues. But last year, when running to the opposite side of Nelson, he barely averaged over 2 yards per carry.
Wow.
And over 4 yards, like 4.5 yards per carry to Nelson, Quentin Nelson's side. Mm-hmm. So he's not going to have that for a bit to start the season. He may be one of those late season comes on, just like he did last year. But I'm really worried about him early on to start the season.
Okay, Matt. Is the appropriate level of concern for Jonathan Taylor none, some, or a bowel-loosening level of existential dread?
Whenever you bring up the bowel-loosening
level of existential
dread, it always causes a big problem in my brain. It damages my cerebrum, which
it does.
Enables my speech, judgment, and thinking, reasoning. So I'm going to go exact opposite of Scott and say there's none.
because you can't reason.
Because I can't reason anymore. Taylor finished as RB6 last year, really did that in the second half of the year as the Colts coaching staff had him splitting carries with Nyheim Hines. Notable players that finished around him in PPR leagues, David Montgomery finished 4th. James Robinson finished 7th. Mike Davis finished 12th. What do all those runners have in common? Bad offensive lines and poor quarterback play last year. And yeah, Quentin Nelson is a big loss, but he could only be gone for maybe a month. He might be back by the end of September. The Colts were still ranked as Pro Football Focus's number 2 offensive line coming into camp. There's not really any concern for me. I'm fine drafting him in the first round still.
Well, so you guys took the two extremes, and the correct answer is right between there.
Hey, there we go.
Honestly, that is what it should be. Is some. I just felt like going with the bowels.
I like that. Working against,
and I have no reasoning.
Correct. Never did. Working against Jonathan Taylor, if Wentz doesn't come back until October, you can't roll into any Sunday and feel good about what he might do. You can't. Your level of confidence in any game is going to be low. Every defense will play to stop Jonathan Taylor and make Jacob Eason, not related to Tony, beat them. And that's probably not going to happen very often. Then you add in the unknown status to his best offensive lineman. And you also have to buy into this notion that Frank Reich is suddenly not a running back by committee coach. We have a career with Frank Reich that tells us he is a running back by committee coach. And yes, at the end of the year, he powered Jonathan Taylor. At the end of the year, when they needed every win to get into the playoffs, at that point, He felt like, why not grind up Jonathan Taylor? You have nothing to lose.
And mind you, he didn't have Mac last year.
Didn't have Mac. Now he does. Marlon Mack is back.
Yep.
There are some good things for Taylor, and this is why the answer is some. He is good. The offensive line is still pretty good even without Quentin Nelson. And maybe Carson Wentz only misses a handful of games. But even so, this is a tough spot.
At least Wentz and Nelson Taylor have the same injury, and they can rehab together.
Isn't that sweet?
Isn't it?
Yeah. You know what? They know what they should do? Three-legged race.
Mm.
They would be perfect in the three-legged race. They could put their injured feet in the sack. That's what they should do.
Okay.
Tough question number three.
Which tight end should go first? Darren Waller or George Kittle? And I'll note to listeners, they are currently separated by 4 picks in average draft position. So it's very tight right here. Which should go first? We begin with Matt.
I wavered back and forth on this one a little bit, and I've actually drafted Waller a few times above Kittle in some of my best ball drafts so far this year. But I'm going to go Kittle, and here's why. The Raiders have one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL and was actually significantly better last year. Mm-hmm. And the Niners have one of the best offensive lines in the league, and it improved with the addition of Alex Mack. Plus, the 49ers have a better quarterback situation, a better offensive coach, seemingly better weapons surrounding their tight ends. And what's good for the offense is good for the offense. And now Waller's going to go first in drafts. Everyone will replay last year and how awesome he was down the stretch while Kittle spent a ton of time injured. I'll spend a few fewer bucks in my auction and get Kittle and get similar, if not better, results than Waller.
Okay. Scott, who should, and I know how you feel about, you love both of these players.
I do.
This question is really, it's called three tough questions for a reason. I'm going right at your heart on this.
You are.
Which tight end should go first, Waller or Kittle?
Yeah, this sucks because I was early on the Kittle train.
Yes, you were.
I loved Kittle. But
past tense, I noticed.
Yes,
you said loved.
I still absolutely love George Kittle. But if I just have to take one or the other, I'm taking Darren Waller. He's going to be the number one or number two target getter. I have a hard time believing he'll even be number two. He'll be the number one target getter for Carr. He's going to be Carr's security blanket. When you're the number one receiving option on your team, you're just going to get a whole lot more options. For the 49ers, they love to run. They might have a quarterback change. Kittle keeps getting injured each year, which it sucks, but it is what it is. They have some up-and-coming, really good other receiving options on that team. I just think Waller's in a much better position to shine, much safer position.
Darren Waller led the NFL in targets among tight ends last year and was near the top, even if when you include wide receivers.
And the 49ers' D is much better, which they might not need to pass as much.
Well, when Kyle Shanahan can run, he's got a healthy, effective runner, he does.
Yeah, and the Super Bowl year, great defense, did not pass as much. You saw the playoffs.
Unfortunately, as a Viking fan, I did see that playoff run. The tight end that should go first. Although, I'll be honest, Matt swayed me more than I thought I would be swayed.
Ooh, look at that.
The correct answer is Darren Waller, for the reasons you've already mentioned. Kittle has to compete for passes with other excellent receivers, and Kittle does have the history of injury, but
it's convenient that he has to compete for passes when he's got a good offense. But some other times, it's like, he's got good wide receivers around him.
Correct. Correct answer is Darren Waller. Now, what you didn't know was coming.
Tough question number four.
Aha!
Woo! Oh my gosh.
A bonus tough question. Drafters who take all of their allotted time in a slow draft. They play out like every minute of it in a slow draft, online slow draft, just in case something might happen. Like, maybe I'll get a trade offer, or maybe there'll be like some injury thing that I could capitalize on. I'm going to play it, milk it all out every last minute. Are they A, asshats, B, ultra asshats, or C, the quintessential asshat in the history of asshats?
Man.
Scott.
I think I'm going to just go with the first one, but I can see all the arguments. It's good strategy, but it's also really, really hard on a league.
Deeply inconsiderate
anything,
to the other players in your league.
Anything you do that hurts the league is not good. Technically, that's the rule. They have their time. They can do with that time whatever they want, but it's just not very nice. So I'm just going to go with the first one, but I can understand any of these.
It's annoying, but if it's really bugging you, why are you in a league that has a slow draft element to it then? Why don't we speed up the element of your league if it's ruining your league?
If you know who you're going to take,
yeah,
take your guy.
Okay.
That's not hard. You got 11 other teammates that are waiting for you to make your damn pick. Go make your pick. Let's keep this draft moving.
I think that you just wanted to say asshat several times, on Major Market
Correct
Radio.
Correct answer was A, B, and C, all of the above.
And I worked very hard not to use the word.
I thought about making it a series of more vulgar words.
Ooh.
We'll just stick with asshat because that's what you are when you take every minute of your allotted time in a slow draft. When we come back, what to do with that new extra week on your schedule, and we release our first three sleepers of the preseason. Final segment of Fantasy Football Weekly. Football Weekly, year number 27. Thank you for joining us. I am Paul Charchi and GuillotineLeagues.com. My co-hosts are Matt Harrison. You can find his work at ShockFantasy.com and Scott Fish, longtime contributor to this show. In our final segment, we always give out our three sleepers of the week. And we'll do that in just a moment. But first, commissioners have got this new extra week in the schedule. And while you could just have another week, schedule teams, whatever, I like having some fun with this new extra week.
Sure.
And so I've got some ideas, I know you guys have too, about what to do with this new extra week that we've all got. Now, I think we all agree that we're not playing week 18 because
right.
You shouldn't be playing, deciding your fantasy championship in a week in which the best players aren't playing.
Right.
And we're just backing up our 3 weeks of playoffs. And so, you know, we're not really changing the playoff format, just the weeks they come in. And you've got this extra week, and it might be now like week 14, which used to be the start of the playoffs. So now it's this new week 14. What are some fun things that people can do in week 14 with this new extra week?
You know, the options were, there were so many more options before the NFL said, hey, we're going to throw bye weeks in week 13 mm-hmm. and week 14.
Yeah.
That really limited what you can do with the playoffs. I think most people are just going to go to the 14-game season with playoffs in weeks 15 and 17. There's a few other things you could do, I guess. If you're a 12-team league, you could play an 11-game season. It's a shorter season, but you play every team exactly once. Mm-hmm. And then go with double headers for each of your playoff weeks.
Uh-huh.
You know, 12, 13,
How do you do
14,
a double 15. Header in a playoff week?
Well, there are sites that allow you to set it up that way, like ESPN does, NFL does. But like basically weeks 12 and 13 is week one of the playoffs for you. Week 14 and 15 is week two. And week 16 and 17 is the championship game, the combined score. So that eliminates some of the luck from a one-week matchup. And you can, you know, have trash talk in between the 2 weeks, which is fun.
I like the luck because,
yeah,
you know,
know
that's
you
just, it's just part of what, you know, if chalk always wins, why watch sports, right? If the better team always wins, we wouldn't watch. Part of what makes sports compelling is underdogs overachieving
right.
and watching great teams lose. That's what makes sports captivating, and fantasy football is no different.
Okay. I know you like that. We've talked about that before. Some people like to remove as much luck as possible and
they
have
do.
The skilled teams win.
Yeah, well, have a playoff system.
Yeah. Exactly.
Don't even have a playoff system. Just use points scored
yep,
for the
exactly.
season. You know, to me, that's not fun.
No, no.
I'll give you my idea.
Okay.
And then you can poo-poo mine.
Sure. No.
Rivalry week. Rivalry week.
Yep.
Rivalry week. In rivalry week, you find in your league, for whatever reason, players that have a built-in rivalry with each other.
Sure.
It could be
their
brothers in the
yeah.
league, right? So we're going to pit them against each other. Bernie and Dave Kelter, you're going to play against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be the guy who knocked you out last year,
sure.
right? And, you know, that was the guy who knocked you out of the playoffs. We're going to put those back together. I think in most leagues, established leagues, you can find a reason to find rivals in most of your league and set those guys up to play in rivalry week?
So I love rivalries. I've done them almost my entire fantasy career.
Really?
My home league, we have five. It's a 10-team league. We have five rivalry trophies. And at the draft, we also draft our rival for the season.
What do you mean? Explain this.
You draft a rival.
So I draft you?
Yeah. I would,
okay.
Yeah, you
all
could
right.
draft
So wait, do I still get my draft pick?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, this is a second draft.
Oh, okay. It's second draft of rivals. Yeah. Ooh,
you
I
draft
like this
rivals.
Already.
Like, if you draft me, let's say the people who won the rivalry game last year are the ones getting drafted. The losers from the previous year do the drafting. So you lost last year.
Of course.
You're picking
I did.
Me.
Yes.
And I am holding, and our trophies are like the Scotch trophy, the duct tape trophy, the diehard trophy.
Oh, that's awesome.
So we have trophies for those rivalry games. And in a season like this, you can keep your 13-game season that you had last year with the 3 weeks of playoffs and do week one or two or three or four, one of the ones or five, one of the ones with no buys.
Right.
But week one's a cool way to do it. And you can have that rivalry week there and keep your regular season the way it was.
I love it.
But we draft rivals every year.
When I thought I had heard of like every drafting variation, I have never heard of drafting your rival.
Oh, yeah. My Pigs Leagues draft rivals every year. We have rivalry trophies, and you actually have to send the loser has to send the winner $10.
Wow.
If you lose the rivalry game.
How about this? Play-in week just before the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's week 14.
That was the next one I had.
Okay, all right. So the teams that are jostling for playoff spots face each other. So you effectively have a play-in week.
Sure.
And some of the teams are going to be out of it, and they can just play each other. Whatever. It doesn't matter. But you want to find these teams that are playing to get into the playoffs and set them up. So you won't have a set schedule. You're not going to know until week 13 is over, and then you use 14 as your play-in week.
Okay, so this is similar to that, and I think this actually came from one of our listeners of my Commission Impossible podcast when we went over this. But having that last week before the playoffs be an all play, and so you can rack up X amount of wins in that week.
Oh,
so that way, even if you had a
whoa,
bad
you
season.
You can get a ton of wins.
Yeah. You have a bad season.
And a 12-team, I could get 11 wins that week.
You're not tanking because I believe the league he set up was doubleheaders throughout. So
that mitigated a little bit.
Yeah, but you could make a rule where you get a half a win for each team you beat or whatever. But that allows it for the teams that are at the bottom to be like, oh, maybe I have a shot to make a comeback, here strong in the second half of the season. So having that play-in week be an all-play where you can rack up some extra wins and maybe affect the seeding. It's better for the teams that are coming on strong at the end of the year.
I've got one more idea for what to do with that new extra week in your fantasy schedule. Play for stakes.
And here's the actual stake.
No, well, you
Manny's.
Got it. Manny's stakes. Yeah, they ship at home now. Play for stakes. The winners get to rename the loser's team and change their logo for that week.
Okay.
So I'm playing Scott. I beat Scott. I get to rename his team, change his logo. Now, your league, depending on how your league feels about things, that could go a lot of ways. you may have to be, you'll be a little thoughtful about how you're going to use that. But I think that, to me, that is potentially a ton of fun.
The one thing we do have to keep in mind is week 14 does have buys. So, a lot of leagues might want to do one of these fun weeks in, like, say, week five.
Potentially.
Weeks one through five.
You can play for stakes whenever you want.
Yeah.
Because there's really nothing, in this case, changing logo and team name.
Yeah.
We're just having fun at somebody else's expense.
I think one of the important things that we should mention that leagues should start their playoffs in week 15 this year,
15, 16,
not
17.
Week 14, where the Eagles, Colts, Dolphins, and Patriots are on bye.
Yeah. Yep. No way can you do that.
So you should definitely plan 15, 16, 17 as your playoff weeks this year.
Next year, if those byes aren't in week 14, just to throw it out there, you can play your 13-game schedule and your 13-week season and take out the luck of the championship game and have it be 2 weeks.
Stop.
I'm just kidding.
All right.
Just kidding with
Let's go to our three sleepers. These are players that are going in roughly double-digit rounds of ADP. Average draft positions in 10th round or lower, but should be able to significantly outproduce that spot. Matt, I will begin with you.
Yeah, my guy's going in the 12th round in most drafts right now, and it's a guy that you may know and may have drafted 1-1 overall at one point in your fantasy career, and that's David Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
He averaged 15 touches per game last season. Yeah, he was dinged up again last year, missed 4 games due to injury, but still finished as running back 21 in PPR leagues.
Which is shocking in retrospect.
Yeah, he's an RB2. On most rosters, and you can get him as in the 12th round of your drafts right now. Positive run rate of 85.7%.
Not bad.
A robust ADOT of 3.1 yards for a running back, at least.
Okay.
40% of Houston's red zone touches went to David Johnson last year. Inside the 5, he converted 6 of his 15 touches for touchdowns.
Yeah, that's not great, I'll be honest. But the fact that he got 15 touches is pretty good.
Yeah, and well, it's 40% of the team's overall. 15 touches per game over a 17-game schedule is 255. 5 touches in the 2 seasons where David Johnson has had just 200 touches.
Mm-hmm.
He's finished as RB1 and RB9.
That ain't happening this year.
He can get
but
to 200
it is a
touches.
Value. It is a value.
He
in
can
the
get to 200
round.
Touches, and that means that he's going to be a viable fantasy starter, or at least a flex play for you in any given week.
We have a new coaching staff.
Yep.
We don't know for sure how that Houston running back committee is going to end up working out. Mark Ingram, Philip Lindsay, David Johnson. But well, the presumption is that Johnson will get most of the work.
Well, Johnson's going to get all the pass catching work because Philip Lindsay had 7 catches last year. Mark Ingram had 6 catches last year.
Yeah.
David Johnson's the pass catching running back on that roster
and probably
RB1.
Yeah, on PPR alone, David Johnson should go before round 12.
Yeah.
I like it. Scott, who is your sleeper this week?
So I'm going with a guy that's being drafted in the mid-13th, and I feel like it's weird. We run in these fantasy circles, so he doesn't feel like a super sleeper, but to a lot of people, he's still a sleeper. And it's Adam Trautman, tight end, New Orleans Saints.
Mm-hmm.
Jameis Winston, if he becomes the quarterback, something like a quarter or a third of his career touchdown passes are to tight ends.
Mm. Cameron Brate.
Yeah, and New Orleans over the last couple of years have thrown over 20 touchdown passes to tight ends. Pete Prisco of CBS mentioned to Jamie Eisenberg the other day that all the passes in camp right now are going to Kamara and Trautman. It's those two guys, just tons and tons of targets. With Michael Thomas out for maybe a big portion of the season, Trautman could be a target hog down there, and he's a tight end you might get in the 13th round. So if you don't get that top 6, you can wait and grab guys like him and a few others.
Yeah, I like Trautman as my second tight end. You know, if I slough that position, I go like tight end 8th or 9th round, and then I get Trautman in 13.
They have too much of a history of the Josh Hills and the Colby Fleeners.
Correct.
And
I can't count on
there's
him.
There's too much of a history of that to be like, yes, but he is in my top 12 tight ends.
And Trautman's ADP is moving up.
Yeah.
So that, big time right now. He's already up to the 11th round in underdog leagues.
Is Trautman going upstream with his ADP?
I see what you did there.
See, that's why I picked him, because of my last name. I drafted him in every league just so I could have.
Are you only going to pick fish-related sleepers for the preseason?
Fellow fishman. That's what it is for me.
Not Frischman.
No.
What was Fred? No. What was his first name?
Man.
Oh, well, I don't remember.
I don't either.
My sleeper is going off the board in the 10th round. Now, listen to this guy. I'm going to give you some stats on this guy without revealing his name. Listen to this and put it against his 10th round ADP. He was ranked 5th among all running backs by Pro Football Focus. Fifth.
In what category?
This is their overall rankings.
Oh.
Overall running back rankings, he was 5th.
Okay, keep going. I have a counterpoint to that.
27 spots ahead of the team's number one runner by Pro Football Focus ranking. This mystery running back that I'm describing in the 10th round. In his 3 seasons, he's never averaged less than 5 yards per carry in any of his 3 seasons. His team just re-signed him to a multi-year extension and released his main competition for carries.
Now I know who it is.
He got double-digit carries from inside the 5-yard line last year. His team runs the ball constantly with rushing play percentage ranks of number 1, and number 3 the last 3 years. His team has run the ball 200 times more than any other team over the last 3 years.
That one's the giveaway.
This mystery player finished as running back 27, and he's currently going off the board this year at running back 43 for no reason whatsoever.
And he drives a bus.
And he drives a bus, and his name is Gus. Gus Edwards, our final sleeper of this show. Gentlemen, great job. Thank you very much. Thank you to all of our listeners. If you haven't tried a Guillotine League or you want to learn more, again, the premise, 18 teams start the season. Then, no head-to-head. The low-scoring team each week gets cut. All the players go to the waiver wire where pandemonium bidding occurs. All kinds of strategies you decide how much of your fab to bid on the great players that just hit the waiver wire. All you have to do is not be last in every given week, and the last team standing wins the whole thing. That's the Guillotine League premise at guillotineleagues.com. Gentlemen, we'll talk to you next week.
See ya.
Bye, everybody. Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.